Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo. I'm the director of AGLCA. My guest today is Bud Lloyd, who is the cruising editor for Waterway Guide's Southern Edition. We'll be talking about the two route options that loopers are currently taking or getting ready to take as they start to leave their warm winter areas of South Florida and the Keys and the Bahamas. Before we get started, though, I would like to take just a minute to recognize and to thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, and Waterway Guide Media. So as always, we encourage all of our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Let's jump into today's interview. Bud, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Why don't we start, if you can just tell everyone a little bit about your background and what you do for Waterway Guides.
Okay. Well, our background is that we've been boating for a number of years. We've had a series of sailboats, and we went over to, as some of our friends say, we went over to the dark side into a trawler several years ago, and because we wanted to do some cruising. We're from Long Beach, California, and we shipped the boat out here after cruising extensively in California and parts of Mexico. And we've been out here for, we're working on year 10 right now, cruising, full-time cruising.
Great.
And we are cruising editors. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how did you get involved with Waterway Guide, and what do you do for them?
Well, we got involved with them through a friend of ours who recommended us to be a cruising editor. And so we took that job on after interviewing with Jack Dozier. That was back in 2009. And we've been doing it ever since. And we do all of Florida. We do what they call the Southern Guide, which is Florida. And we do half of the ICW from Southport, North Carolina, to the Georgia border.
Okay, well, great. And that is really why we asked you to join us today, because loopers that are on the kind of traditional seasonal route are getting ready to make their way from where they've spent some time in the sun over the winter. So some have kind of stayed in southwest Florida there on along the Gulf. Some have been in the Keys, and some have been in the Bahamas. So where they're coming from, I would imagine, is going to determine a little bit which of the two routes we're discussing today they will take. So why don't we go ahead and kind of start with the Lake Okeechobee route. Tell us what that is, where loopers would be starting from as if they're going across the lake, and where they come out on the other side.
Okay. Well, if you're coming from the west coast of Florida, you pick it up at Fort Myers, which is that's the end of the Okeechobee waterway, because everything travels east to west. So you pick it up over there just outside of Fort Myers and travel east going up the Caloosahatchee River. And it's a very pretty river. It's very busy when you first start the route through Fort Myers and through Cape Coral. But once you get north of the area of North Fort Myers, it becomes very rural. And you'll see a few scattered homes here and there, but they are truly scattered. And it's a very, very pretty river. It's deep. There's no depth problems at all. And you go up to Moorhaven, which is right at the edge of the lake, pretty much. And there is a lock there that you go through. As you're going up the Caloosahatchee River, the very first lock you'll come to, probably, I'm going to say 20 miles into the trip, you'll come to the Franklin Lock. And it's an easy lock to go through. You just need to call the lock keeper on Channel 9, and he'll respond to you and give you any instructions if any are necessary. You transit through the lock. Takes about, we usually plan 45 minutes to go through a lock. So, that's just a rough figure, but it'll give you a rough idea how long you're going to go. If you're going to go all the way to Morehead City or Morehaven, it's a long trip from Fort Myers. We usually split it up. The way we split it up is as you pass through the Franklin Lock, if you turn immediately to the left, turn to port, there's a campground over there that has the Army Corps of Engineers also built 8 slips in there that can handle a 40 to 45 foot boat. And it's
okay.
Very inexpensive. It's like $20 a day, and then there's water and power and everything. It's a lot of fun. We always meet a lot of really nice people there.
So, but
and then
how
we
far
take the
is
next
it?
Date. Go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry, just to cover that a little bit. How far is it, basically, from Fort Myers to Morehaven if you're doing that entire stretch?
That entire stretch is probably in the neighborhood of 70 miles, 60 miles, something like that.
Okay, so certainly more than most loopers do in a day, which is the reason
and if
you're...
You like to,
go ahead.
If you like to stop and smell the roses a little bit, it's a really pretty area to do it in.
Mm-hmm. So that's the reason for the potential stop there at near the Franklin Lock with the campground there.
Exactly.
Any recommendations if you get to, you said it's kind of first come, first serve for those 8 slips. Does it happen often that those are filled? And if it is, what's the alternative if you get there and there's no dockage available?
The alternative is anchoring, and there is a really nice little secluded anchorage that can probably hold 2 boats, 3 boats at the max. We've never been turned away there, and we've stopped there numerous times. So a lot of people don't even know it exists, but it's an interesting little spot. There's nothing there, I mean, other than a campground, but it's a pretty stop and good for pictures and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What would come next? If you're breaking it up into kind of manageable pieces per day, I would imagine from there, from that campground, the next stop, you're kind of reaching the lake the next day. Is that correct?
Yeah. You'd stop. You probably would want to stop in Morehaven and stage to go across the lake early in the following day rather than going across late in the afternoon when you might encounter a lot of winds and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Crossing
and
the lake
are there
is not...
I'm sorry, are there facilities there in Morehaven?
Yes, there are. There's a city dock that can handle probably, I'm going to say, 4 to 5 boats, good-sized boats, which is you just charge $1 a day, and you just pull up to it and walk across the street to the city hall. It's a tiny, tiny little town, so the city hall is just not more than a house, but you just go in there and pay for it there. There's also another alternative to that, and that is to right next door to that is a place called River House Inn, and they have some slips operating basically the same way. You just go across the street and pay for it, or there's an envelope that you can put it in. It's kind of on the honor system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
$1
a foot per day, too, so...
Great. Those sound like very good options. So at that point, we're ready to actually cross the lake. Tell us what we can expect from that.
Okay. Well, after you leave Morehaven, you immediately go through a lock, which is the Ortuno. I'm sorry. It's the Morehaven Lock. And that, again, is a very easy transit. You go into a canal, and you run right along the very, very edge of the lake in this canal. And for about 10 miles. And once you get to Clewiston and the Roland and Mary Martin Marina, which is there, you make a turn to port and you go into the lake. Crossing the lake is not a big issue. There are 2 areas of shallow water, and one of them is shortly after you enter the lake on the west side. There's about a 3-mile, 4-mile stretch that's well marked with a lot of day markers, and you need to stay in the channel. You get out of the channel and you will be aground. It's with a cruising boat, there's no doubt about it. But the channel is deep enough, with the exception of at the very, I'm going to say about 2 miles out, there's a very shallow spot, and it gets down to about 6 feet. And it can get lower depending on the stage of the lake. Now, one thing I really would encourage everybody to do if they're going to cross the lake is prior to crossing, call the Army Corps of Engineers. They're the ones responsible for keeping the lake at its level. And here's the phone number for it in case they're interested. It's 863-983-8101. They're very, very helpful. They're very friendly. And I think in some ways they appreciate people calling and getting the information rather than getting into trouble on the lake.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, there's been a lot of chatter in the last week or so on the AGLCA members' discussion forum about Lake Okeechobee and the rim route versus going straight across the lake. Definitely
right.
Some concerns potentially about debris out there and other obstacles that you may have as you're doing that. So can you talk to us a little bit about the rim route versus going straight across the lake and what differences you would see in those two different options?
Okay. The rim route is a very interesting route. It's something you probably would want to do at least one time. It's not overly shallow. There's one shallow spot. When you leave Clewiston, if you're going west to east again, when you leave Clewiston, you just stay right on that channel that you approached Clewiston on and continue around. It's the channel is narrow, the channel's deep. You come through, and there's one marina in that whole about a 35-mile trip. There's one marina, and it's at Pahokee, a little town of Pahokee. And again, this is attached to a KOA campground. And it's a large marina. I'm going to say there's at least 100 slips in the marina, and it used to be a loggerhead. But loggerhead bailed out, and the city of Pahokee took it over. And you call the campground to get a slip. I don't have that number at hand, but it's a KOA campground in Pahokee, Florida. Anyway, there is debris. You have to watch. There's a lot of hyacinth in the water, which is a floating plant. Doesn't seem to bother, it's never bothered our boat. We've been through there a couple of times, and it just parts. It's right on the surface, so it just parts its way. Interesting trip. There's a levee that is for a large portion of it, so it's not really an overly scenic trip land side. It's more scenic on the water side, going looking at the lake. It's about 35 mile long. You're not going to be able to make much speed going through there. There's one bridge to encounter, and it has to open. And interestingly, it's a manual bridge. So you call a place called Slim's Fish Camp and let them know that you're approaching the bridge, and you'll just see the guy kind of meander out from this little store. And he goes to the center of the bridge, and he starts turning a big wheel, and the bridge opens for you. So it's a swing bridge. So,
okay, and does that usually cause a lengthy delay, or are they usually pretty accessible to open that bridge for you?
Yeah, if you call him in time, you'll see him walking out there before you get to the bridge, and it doesn't take that long to open. No, it's not a lengthy delay at all.
Okay.
But anyway, you go through, and you cross the lake at that point, and you come to the shallow spot, which is just before you get to the Port Mayaca lock, and it can get down to about 6 feet also. We've never had a problem, but we've always gone through with a pretty good water stage on the lake. There's no tide in the lake, so you don't have to be concerned about that. Now, if you want to go across straight across, that's where you leave Clewiston. You make that turn to port, and you go into that channel that has that shallow spot, and you follow a well-marked channel across the lake. It zigzags a little bit, not bad. Once you get past that shallow spot, you'll have a usually have anywhere from about 10 to 13 feet of water. So shallow is not a problem as long as you stay in the channel. Out in the middle of the lake, the markers can be quite a ways apart. So having a good chart plotter on your boat makes a difference. You can run a compass course also, but there could be a couple of mile or more between markers. So sometimes they're hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cross there, you come to Port.
I'm sorry, what's the distance on the straight across?
It's about 25 miles.
And the next, you were just about to tell us the next lock.
Oh, yeah, the next lock is that Port Mayaca lock. The two, the rim route and the route one, which is across the lake, they converge right at Port Mayaca lock. And you go through that lock again. It's a simple lock to go through. Just call the lock tender and he'll give you instructions. And then you enter the St. Lucie River. And at that point, you're on the east side of the state. And you just traverse down the St. Lucie River, and you'll come through. There's going to be a total of three locks on that. You have the Port Mayaca lock, and there's an Ortuna lock, and there's a Ortuna, and there's a St. Lucie lock. And, they're, again, they're very, very simple locks to go through. They provide all the lines, so you don't even need to get dock lines out.
So there's total travel time, Bud, would you say, on for the Okeechobee Waterway from the west coast to the east coast of Florida, how many days would you suggest?
Well, it's 150 miles. So from there to Stewart, and or from Fort Myers to Stewart, it's 150 miles. So depending on how they want to split it up, you know, if you want to do 40-mile days, you want to do 50-mile days, 20-mile days, it just depends. And there's plenty of places to stop as far as anchoring goes. Just about any kind of a wide spot in the highway, so to speak, you can pull over and anchor. There's no restrictions that I know of in anchoring.
We're going to shift in a minute and kind of cover the other route from southeastern Florida, taking the ICW. Is there any other tips or information that we should know about the Okeechobee Waterway before we shift?
No, the only thing is they need to, especially sailboaters, need to be aware that they have to be able to clear 45-foot bridges. There's two. There's one on each side, and that's the controlling factor for sailboats. They got to be able to get under a 45-foot bridge in order
to
do the Okeechobee. Yeah.
Okay, great. We're going to pause for 1 minute while I play a message from one of our sponsors, and then we'll come back and talk about that southeastern Florida route for about 10 minutes. So I'll be back in a minute.
The Renaissance Vinoy St. Petersburg Resort and Golf Club is the only luxury St. Petersburg waterfront hotel that combines a private marina with all of the exceptional amenities of a world-class resort. Visitors can enjoy the newly renovated lounge-like lobby, library, cafe, resort shop, and expanded promenade bar. As a marina guest, you have access to an 18-hole championship golf course and 12-court tennis complex, four restaurants, a full-service spa, and a fitness center equipped for an exhilarating workout. They will even bring the resort's distinctive dining experience to you with a special menu for dockside dining on your boat. For more information or to make a reservation, visit www.vinoymarina.com or call 727-824-8022. Renaissance Vinoy Resort and Golf Club is a proud Commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Okay, Bud, so take us on the ICW in South Florida. If loopers have been spending some time in the Bahamas and they're headed back to the U.S. and ready to continue the journey north, tell us about where they're coming in and where they're headed.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to do one correction to a statement that I made on the Okeechobee Waterway. I told them for lock information to go ahead and call Channel 9 on the VHF.
Mm-hmm.
I was in error. It should be Channel 13. So, aside from that.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up the ICW, you want to start down in Miami and come north or Fort Lauderdale?
Sure, yeah, let's start
north?
At Miami. Mm-hmm. Well, we're
Miami,
a little bit limited on time, but if we have time, let's start at Miami.
Okay, they would go through either Cape Florida / Biscayne Bay entrance or inlet, or they would come through Government Cut, which is in Miami, which is a major cut.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the cruise ships and so forth come in. There's numerous marina options there. There's a lot of anchoring options in behind Venetian Causeway, and it's a kind of an interesting trip. It's very busy. And then you come up through Hollywood, Florida, and you there's marinas there. There's a lot of restaurants and everything to go through. So, again, an interesting trip. It's a very crowded trip. From Hollywood, you come into Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale is, it's got to be the mega boat capital of the world. I mean, it's, you will see so many 200-foot vessels in there. It's scary. And but the boating options are endless. There's a tremendous number of marinas. There's a couple of spots to anchor, Lake Sylvia being one. There's a lot of, the city marina has three different marinas. They have Los Olas. They have the downtown marina, which is on New River, which runs right through downtown Fort Lauderdale. From Fort Lauderdale north, you go through Boynton Beach, Palm Beach, West Palm. You go through a whole bunch of very, very upscale towns. It's boating-wise, it's very active and very busy. There's a tremendous number of bridges to be concerned about. All the bridges will either be 65 feet or they'll have to open for sailboaters. I figure there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 bridges in 40 miles, so that'll give you a rough idea. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the bridges are all scheduled and so forth, and you can get all that information out of Waterway Guide or off the website. There's a lot of that information around. The next place you'd come to that they might want to stop is Lake Worth. It's a major inlet. Lake Worth Inlet is probably one of the biggest jump-off spots going to and coming back from the Bahamas. It's got a very large anchorage with from 10 to 14 feet of water, so, and there's, you can put 50, 75 boats in this anchorage. It's huge. And you have land access and some marina access. From from Lake Worth north, you go up through Jupiter, and which is another inlet, a little bit questionable, but it's marked, but it shifts. So you have to pay attention to all of the inlets as far as markers moving. Might not be as it was charted, but the markers are true because the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard keeps moving them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start leaving the, at that point, you start leaving at Jupiter, you start leaving the hustle bustle. You get into a little bit more of the casual boating, a lot of boating still, but still. Then your next stop would be up in the neighborhood of Stewart, which mm-hmm. is where the crossroads are, where the Okeechobee Waterway comes in and everything. And Stewart is a fun town. There's several marinas there. There's good access to town. It's a really nice, small little town, some great restaurants. And then you want to keep going further north from there?
Let's stop there for a minute. I think we're going to cover from Stewart north on next week's show. But a question or two about this area of Florida that we're talking about. First of all, because it is so immersed in boating, I know there's lots of marinas, lots of waterfront restaurants and shopping, so facilities aren't really an issue. But can you talk to us a little bit about any restrictions on anchoring in this area?
Miami has more restrictions than any place. And there's one place that it's not even worth attempting in Miami. It's called Sunset Lake. It's a very small little area. And at this point, it's not even worth attempting. There's a homeowner in there that just gives everybody absolute grief with loud music, horns, whistles, lights, and everything else. Just, mm-hmm. it's not right. Anyway, aside from that, restrictions are, you know, you have to stay away from the homeowner's property. Right now, I usually suggest people say 50 to 100 feet away. That's up to them. There's a lot of anchoring in Miami if you can find the right spot behind Venetian Causeway. Going north from there, there's isolated spots. There's Sunset Lake in Fort Lauderdale. There's Lake Sylvia in Fort Lauderdale that are good anchoring spots. And then there's some that are just kind of off the waterway, you know, a wide spot in the waterway type thing, as long as you can get out of the channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can go all the way up. Just before you get into Stewart, there's a really great anchorage called Peck Lake. again, it's just a wide spot in the highway, but it's really fun. It's got great beach access. You're only about, you're not even 100 yards, I don't think, from the beach at that point.
Wonderful. Okay. I think we'll hold it there, and we'll pick up in Stuart on next week's broadcast. All of this information, Bud, that you're sharing with us is information as the editor of the Southern Guide for Waterway Guide is in the book and on the website. So, you know, we would encourage all of our listeners, if they're looking for additional details, to check out waterwayguide.com or their new iPhone app, which will be available shortly for Android as well. If you are looking for more information about the Great Loop, you can visit our website at greatloop.org. We'll stop there, as I said. We'll pick up with Bud again next week and talk more about cruising the ICW in Florida from Stuart northward. But until then, Bud, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week, and safe cruising, everyone.
Thank you very much for having me.